From Radio Sausalito in beautiful Sausalito, California, I'm Mitchell Field, and you are on the field trip. Welcome to The Field Trip, a few minutes of conversation each week with some of the most interesting people in the Bay Area. I talk to artists and writers, actors, directors, musicians, some of the characters who make the Bay Area a fun and a fabulous place to live. So let's get right to it. Today's show is the third and final part of my interview with John Martini, whose new book, Sutro's Glass Palace, The Story of Sutro Baths, has just been published. Eventually, Sutro died in 1898, and there's a strange story because his remains, the whereabouts of his remains is unknown today, right?
Yeah, we have a suspicion, but Sutro died in 1898, and his wishes that he expressed to his family was he wanted to be buried at Sutro Heights. And in those days, there was no such thing as, you know, being cremated and scattered. City law was you had to be buried in a cemetery, or if you were cremated, your remains had to be put in a repository called a columbarium. And Sutro dies in August 1898, and he lies in state at Sutro Heights, and then he's cremated. And there is still standing a columbarium. It's out on Geary Street. It's one of the only remaining structures from the what were called the Lone Mountain Cemeteries that used to be located at that end of town. Big Roman-looking structure, and there's a crypt in there, a little niche, and it says Sutro on it. And his ashes were put in the little sealed crypt, had a glass front on it. And years later, his family checked out the ashes, and he's never been seen again. The historians who talked to the family about what happened to Adolf Sutro, this is secondhand, but from those historians relate to me that the family basically says, he's at Sutro Heights, that's all you need to know. He's where he wanted to be.
So Sutro's gone, and what happened to his holdings after that?
They got broken up quickly. Sutro was a man who spent and invested, and he was classified what you would call land rich and money poor. When he died, his eldest daughter, Emma Sutro Merritt, she was the executrix, and when she opened the books, according to the documents I've read, he was worth millions of dollars in property in California and Nevada, not just San Francisco, but also up in Napa. And he had real estate holdings, but when it came to cash, there was, I think, less than $500 in the checking account.
Interesting.
So she had to, you know, really look at where the money had gone and what the cash flow was going to do. The baths were making money, but nothing that was going to pay back the investment that went into it. So she began to close down and sell off some of the properties, most notably the amusement park at Merry Way. That was shut down within months of Sutro's dying. Then she sold off the Sutro Electric Railroad Company. And then she sold off other properties. She immediately tried to start giving away or leasing out the baths. She tried to get the city of San Francisco to lease the structure or even buy it. She offered it like at a rock bottom price. She offered to sell the city Sutro Baths and Sutro Heights and property around Land's End. It was a bond measure in 1912. The voters wouldn't go for it. She offered it to anybody, and the price kept going down and down, and no luck. To cut to the chase, the family ended up managing the Sutro Baths until 1952. They tried to give it a facelift in the 1930s, and they introduced all kinds of changes to the baths, including installing an ice skating rink. And I think a very important one was they made you stop wearing the Sutro Baths bathing costumes, let you wear real, honest-to-God swimsuits.
Well, the ice skating rink is what a lot of people remember.
Yeah, now we're talking my era. They decided that the Sutro estate had modernized the place, and ice skating at Sutro's started in 37. And for about 15 years, you simultaneously had ice skating, and you had hot water, salt water baths separated by a plywood wall in the same building. Eventually, you get to the post-World War II era, and the building was old, and taste and recreation were changing. And they announced in 1952 they were going to shut the baths for good, and the future was undetermined. And in September of 1952, their neighbor and competitor, George Whitney, who owned Playland at the Beach and the Cliff House, he offered to buy it so it would stay open. The last 12 years that Sutro Baths operated, it was run by the Whitney family.
Well, finally, Sutro's closed for business in 1966. What happened next?
What they decided to do was tear down Sutro Baths and redevelop the cove as condominiums and retail. But nobody thought to preserve it. And then about 3 weeks after demolition began, boom, what we call a very convenient fire broke out, and the building disappeared in one afternoon. I mean, it was a beautiful June day. There was thousands of people turned out to watch Sutro's burn. This is the same time that San Francisco is going through what's been called the freeway revolt. That's when the Save the Bay groups started to rise up. We realized what we were losing environmentally and historically and culturally, and that was the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. It was legislated in 1972, and eventually the site of Sutro Baths was purchased by the National Park Service.
Well, in the past 30 years or so, little seems to have been done with the site. It's a bit of a wreck now, isn't it? It's a ruin, so to speak.
Yeah, you noticed. It's really like frozen in time from right after when the baths burned down. Whenever we have planning sessions about what to do and Sutro Baths comes up, the public is just overwhelming, saying, don't ruin the ruins. People like it the way it is. They like the unexplained tunnels through the hillsides and the odd pieces of concrete. They want to be able to go down and sort of freewheeling it, explore.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, John. Look, before we finish up, talk about another project of yours, the restoration of the Coastal Defense Battery in the Marin Headlands. I know you're heavily involved in that.
Oh, yeah. Up above the beach at Rodeo Beach, there is one of these cavernous World War II underground bunkers, as people call them, called Battery Townsley, and it mounted a pair of huge battleship-sized guns. It was finished just before World War II. Up till 1948, it was the most formidable fortification that we had to defend San Francisco. I used to be the park ranger who supervised all the interpretive and historic activities out in the Marin Headlands. When I retired years later, one of my former volunteers, he said that when he passed away, and he had been given a short timeline by his doctor, he wanted to do a bequest to the park to fix up Battery Townsley. He was very specific. I'd taken him in there. He loved it. He wanted to see it open to the public. He left us a bequest of $250,000 to fix this battery up. Got to give him a plug, Chuck Wolford. He had invested in real estate, and he didn't have a family, so he left a bequest to the park to do this. We put the money to cleaning up the interior first off, getting rid of the graffiti and the beer cans and the broken glass. And, of course, there's asbestos and lead paint. All of it had to be cleared out. Then we put in a solar-powered battery-charged electric system. Then we repainted the interior and opened the battery to the public for guided tours. And one of our biggest accomplishments has been we recently got one of the huge guns of the type that was at the battery. There was one that was in storage, and the park found the money to move the gun, to move it to the battery, and eventually, where it's on display now, eventually we're going to remount it to tell the story of harbor defenses of San Francisco.
Well, I know that those guns were able to fling a shell about the size of a Volkswagen 25 miles out to sea, right?
Sounds like you've taken our tour. Yes, that's how we describe it. Yeah, it fired big pointed projectiles. The average weight was well over a ton, and the maximum range is 25 miles. With very good accuracy.
Well, it's a fascinating thing to see. I was out there recently, and it's very impressive. Well, look, some of John Martini's other books include topics like Alcatraz, Fort Baker, and the Nike missile sites, and he's a very sought-after lecturer on these topics. His upcoming seminar is actually sold out, but if you're interested in hearing him speak, you can find out more information at johnamartini.com. The details of where he'll be speaking are there. His new book, Sutro's Glass Palace, with beautiful illustrations by Lawrence Ormsby, is published by Hole in the Head Press, and it's available at holeintheheadpress.com and also at Barnes & Noble. There's even a free app where you can go and see the development of the Sutro baths from multiple viewpoints. And to see that, go to holeintheheadpress.com/Sutro app. And John, this is fascinating stuff. Best of luck with the new book. And thanks so much for taking us on a field trip today.
Oh, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
That's John Martini, everyone. Well, thanks for joining me on the field trip today. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet, with the fabulous Marin sax man Noel Jukes up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet, featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that the field trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on cable channel 26, anytime on your computer at radiosausalito.org, and 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends, and if you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week.